Up the drive from the court, the RAF and a small number of Navy personnel had moved into RAF Defford. Airframe fitter Albert Shorrock and Wren Wendy Hogarth were among them.
I went to Defford right at its inception. It was in May 1942, and I was there until September 1945. We worked on practically every type of aircraft that flew during the war. There was over 70 different types of aircraft. At any one time, we had upwards of about 200 aircraft on station. There wasn't another airfield like it anywhere in the country. We were really special as far as that went, because the work was so important there and so essential, crucial at that time. We had everything coming in there for the scientists.
The aerodrome, as you probably know, was doing experimental work, flying the equipment which the boffins at TRE Malvern were experimenting on radar. So there were naval planes there, as well as RAF planes, although it was an RAF station. But then the Wren section was very small. When I went, it had it only been in existence a few months, and there were about 20 of us, and we were completely autonomous, which was rather fun. There was a steward who actually cleaned the Wrennery, which was situated at the bottom of the hill at the crossroads by the guardhouse.
At Defford, we had these comfortable billets. In no time at all, we got the cookhouse, the naffy, the cinema, gymnasium. We got everything at Defford in the finish. In fact, all the surrounding airfields, that was Pershore, Honeybourne, they all looked upon Defford. Defford was holiday camp. You mentioned Defford, they didn't want to know you. Flipping holiday camp, that is, because they were on operations.
Yes.
But they didn't know what we were doing. Well, we didn't know what we were doing either, did we?
One of the interesting things in that winter, 1943, early 44, was the fact that we didn't have much water. The site was so large, there wasn't enough local water, I think. So at the time, water had to be brought into the Wrennery every day. It was winter, so we had hot water bottles, and we had to use those for washing in the morning. And the cook had a certain amount of water for cooking and drinking. And once a week, we were taken to the naval station in Malvern for baths.
It wasn't all hardship and hard work. Most people we've interviewed about this period have very happy memories of their time at Defford. Derek Moseley, who worked for TRE, and Maurice Sherwood recall cricket matches at Croom. Ken Ashenden has memories of local darts matches, and Albert Shorrock got up to all sorts of mischief in the cinema.
Occasionally, the workshop area would make a team up and challenge the drawing office to a game of cricket. Very often, the workshop team would make sure, cheat or otherwise, that they won the game. And it was very, very great pleasure to have an afternoon down outside Croom Court, because it was a beautiful area. And the other occasion we used to use it was once a year in the early days. We would have a sports day, the usual sports of running, tug of war, jumping, and prizes were given for the winners. And it was a pleasant day, a very, very pleasant day.
The field straight in front of the court was the great big sports field. It must have been the best sports field in Worcestershire. It was a five-track, multi-purpose sports field at an RAF standard. It was used every evening in the summer. You'd see all these airmen hurtling down the hill from the Marble Arch, which seemed to be hundreds of airmen on blue bikes. And they wouldn't wait for the bicycle to stop. They would jump off the bike with the bike running into the field and just crashing. And they'd be playing sport all evening.
Saturday night, a crowd of us went to the Monkey House just to try the cider. green stuff it was in those days. And from there on, we decided to go to the Oak, which was a bit further down. And in that particular pub, I don't know if you know it, in order to get the right headroom for the darts, you have to stand in a hole in the floor. It's about 9 inches deep.
One amusing thing in the cinema, you're always looking out for, you know, a little bit of tomfoolery or whatever, yeah. You know. There'd probably be a row of waffs in front of us, because our seats were all chairs. Well, I don't know whether you know or not, but the waffs, their uniform, they had what they call half belt. It was stitched on the uniform, you see, at the back. And of course, as soon as we got settled in the cinema, it got warm, loosened the tunic, and then towards the end of the film, we used to fasten the belts together, loop them through the chairs. All the way along, doing it nice and quiet. And then when they started to play God Save the Queen, of course they all stand up and all the chairs and go flying all up. Oh, you know, we used to get up to all sorts of tricks, yeah.
A number of our interviewees have childhood memories of the Defford camp. These include Jeff Sherwood, Jill Fone and Maurice Sherwood.
Up at the officers' mess, there was a Mr. Spence, I remember him well, he used to supply the officers' mess with vegetables. We used to set off from the lodge, we used to pick mushrooms and blackberries and take a basket of each up to Mr. Spence and sell them to him. And he used to buy these mushrooms and buy these blackberries. Then on the way back, we'd pick some more mushrooms, and when we got back to the lodge, my mum would then cook them for our breakfast.
I used to wander in and out all the camps. Nobody stopped me. I was given lots of chocolate, which was a great treat during wartime. And I wandered into the hospital side where the canteen is now. I often went to the cinema, which was also situated round there.
Obviously, you've not laid in the hospital officially, but I did go in several times if the orderlies weren't on, or depending what orderly was on. And the cafe was a ward for airmen. And I could see the airmen now in their pyjamas, leaning out of the windows, smoking cigarettes, obviously not supposed to. And they would shave me sometime, got a match, you know.
The Naffy was just outside the front of Persia Lodge. And I do have to say that my grandparents never went short of food. I mean, apart from the van deliveries of meat and various other things, there were tins of salmon and tins of this and tins of that. They were well and truly looked after.
By 1943, there were more than 2,000 service personnel at Defford and about the same number of civilians, many locals amongst them. Joan Gill from Defford Common became a driver.
First of all, I was on one of the flights where I used to drive the airmen around. And then I went on afterwards as a CO's driver. He lived out at Overbury. I used to have to fetch him and take him every day. This one morning, when I picked him up, I said, "The floods are out at Eckington, sir. We can't get there." "Oh, we should get through," he said. So he comes back to Eckington, got behind a war ag lorry loaded with the Italian prisoners of war. And I stopped. He said, "Carry on." So of course we carried on, got right in the centre of the water. And that was it. My car conked out. So I put it in gear, pressed the start until the battery ran out. So then we paddled. Take our socks and shoes off and roll up our trousers and paddle.
Joan later joined up, like many of the staff and workers on Croom Estate, including Lady Coventry. Hilda Newman was her maid.
Lady Coventry had already joined as a senior commandant of the ATS. And she said, "Would I join the ATS?" hoping that she could keep me as her batman and I could travel with her, because I'd always travelled with her wherever she'd gone, you see, I'd always travelled with her, and I suppose she hoped I would still be able to. But the army had other views. They sent her to Warwick and me to Norton Barracks.
Maid or no maid, Lady Coventry threw herself into the war effort. Beryl McKeown recalls an occasion when she tried to give Beryl's father some advice.
Lady Coventry used to come over and visit and invariably said, "How are the children, Reg?" And my father proudly said, "Oh, my son's in the RAF out in India. And my daughter is hoping to join the Wrens." And she said, "Oh, I don't think she'll get into the Wrens, Reg. Lady Joan wanted to join the Wrens and she wasn't able to do. So she had to join the ATS. And then she came along a couple of months later and, "How are the children, Reg?" And, "Well, my son is still out in India and my daughter is in the Wrens." And he rather liked that.